revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today we have a very special guest with us, Ms. Marnie Jameson. She's Executive Director for the Association of Independent Doctors. She's got a very interesting background as well, a former health reporter for Orlando Sentinel and the LA Times. And so she comes at this from, I think, a really interesting perspective where she's seen from a consumer perspective, I would think, and now from a doctor's perspective, the future of medicine and the independent doctor, as I'm sure she'll let us know, and I've been preaching forever, is the centerpiece of a healthcare system that works. And it's been under attack. It's been under siege. Independent doctors are being pushed out of business almost daily. We've lost a significant number, and it's a tragedy for patients, for doctors, and for the healthcare profession. And I would even go further to say the Hippocratic Oath is also under attack, because if the independent doctors lose their footing, patients will lose the biggest advocate they can possibly have to help them get better. I met Ms. Jameson at a congressional, I guess it was a summit, with independent doctors across the country who went to D.C. to try to educate Congressman Sessions, who's very enlightened about what we can do to fix this. I'm done with hearing repeal and replace. I'm sure you are too, Marnie, because it's not going to happen in our, you know, at this rate. I think it's a joke. I think it's a means to, you know, make money, to sucker people into voting for candidates who really have no interest in doing what they say that they're going to do. And I'm optimistic that you are on the ground level, you're the vanguard to open people's eyes so that we can stop being, you know, fooled by this media campaign about it, bigger is better, corporate medicine is the future, it's all about, you know, collectivism, collective healthcare and population-based medicine. It is not. And as long as we are here, I think that we will be able to stop that movement. So I want to thank you so much for being with me this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about, I gave a little synopsis of your resume, but tell us how you got into this.
Well, gosh, I'm a journalist by training, and I went to work right out of college into a hospital where I was the editor of their magazine that went out to the community, and this was back in California. And as I was doing that public relations job for the hospital, the physicians in the hospital were asking me if I might be able to help them boost their practice by doing newsletters for them and what have you. And I started doing some of that for them, and the hospital told me that was a conflict of interest. I didn't even know what that meant. Basically, I was helping their doctors get patients and put the patients in their hospital, and they had a problem with that. Mm. So I did some simple math, which was about the best I could do in math department, and realized I could make more money working for the doctors than I could for the hospital. So I left it. I was 22, and I started my own PR firm in Los Angeles, and pretty soon was representing quite a few physicians and made all the major hospitals in the Southland pretty quickly. And I grew it into a pretty good-sized public relations agency, which about 10 years later I sold when I had a family, and I started writing for the LA Times because I understood the dynamics of the industry in the Southland, and I knew a lot of the players, and so it segued me nicely to become a health reporter at the LA Times. And working there, I moved to Denver, and they didn't seem to mind, but then eventually they realized I wasn't in Los Angeles anymore and asked if I wouldn't mind going all the way over to Orlando and helping them out. So that's how I got into this. I've been writing about healthcare for a long time, trying to be the conduit between the complicated health system and whether it's consumer health or health, the business of healthcare, and simplifying it for the consumer. Because as you indicated, Elena, the government is probably not going to solve this problem. They're going to make it a little worse. or not, if not a lot worse. And I really believe that communication to the consumer mm-hmm. and also to business people and making them aware of what's going on and what they can do to prevent it and change things is going to be the way we need to go. So I feel I'm well positioned to, as a communicator, to be in this world of trying to make clear something that's pretty foggy. And I hope bring some Americans around and we can make a difference.
That's a great point. You mentioned something that I find really fascinating, and I'm not sure you can tease it out for me, but why did they ever tell you in the hospital setting why it was a conflict of interest? Did they ever get into the weeds of that? Because I have my own theory, but what did they tell you?
Well, I think it was more reductive at the time. This was the mid-80s, so I think they were saying, we have hired you to do a job, mm-hmm. and anything that you do apart from that job, while it's if it's related to health care, is a conflict. We're paying you. You can't spend any hours doing anything else, even if I was doing it on the weekend and on my own time. So, you know, if I chose to write for a gardening magazine, they might not have minded. But the fact that I was doing something for doctors upset them. I don't know. And I think now looking back, you know, there might have been a control issue. Mm-hmm. They might have wanted to make sure that they were controlling the message of those doctors and maybe cutting them off at the knees a little bit, not wanting them to be independent and market themselves. I don't know. But I do know that I prevailed, and I went off on my own. The doctors stuck with me, and I continued to market their practices. So hopefully that was a good thing.
Well, it's an excellent thing. And I think if that was back in the 80s, I'm sure if we look at it now, it's much more toxic. I'm finding that the hospitals have become adversarial, completely adversarial to private physicians specifically. They are capturing markets all over the country, especially the bigger the city, the larger the hospital system. And there's an article, or I think you guys on your website, if people go to aid-us.org, they can read about this. But it's interesting that you were involved with winning or bringing suit of some sort against a hospital system that had monopolized the doctors in a particular state. And you won, right?
Yeah, we're really proud of that. There was an antitrust case that happened in Idaho where St. Luke's Health System purchased Salters Medical Group, a 45-doctor group that was the largest in the state. And they said this will be, you know, they claimed what these hospitals always claim, this will integrate care, help the patient, streamline medicine, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, this will be a very good thing for the community. Well, down the street, St. Alphonsus Medical Center said, wait a minute, we don't think so. We think you just violated antitrust law. And the FTC agreed with St. Alphonsus Medical Center and filed suit against St. Luke's, saying they did violate antitrust law and it created a monopoly that was going to ultimately harm the community financially. Mm-hmm. They won. They won the case in Idaho District Court, but St. Luke's didn't like that result, and they appealed to the U.S. District Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the court just under the Supreme Court, as you know. Mm-hmm. And at that point, they, you know, the FTC and St. Alphonsus had to step up their game. And that's when AID got involved. And we were asked, and I wasn't working here yet, so I can brag about the founders of the association. We were very new, and we had limited resources, but we said this is exactly what we were founded for. And they cobbled together some resources, and they paid a top Washington attorney to write an amicus brief, which is a friend of the court opinion, and take it to the panel of judges at the U.S. District Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and explain to them exactly why they needed to unwind this merger and why they needed to uphold the lower court's decision. And February 10th of this year, the court agreed with us and upheld the lower court's decision and ordered that merger get unwound. And that was the first time in U.S. history that a hospital had to divest itself from a medical group that it had acquired and, in fact, it violated antitrust law. So it became a precedent for other hospitals across the country to take a look at that case and think twice before they buy up a big physician groups mm-hmm. and monopolize a community, which, as you know, is the direction this country's going. So we were very excited to put a stop to some of that, and I hope slow down a tide that is quickly sweeping up doctors nationwide.
Well, on your website, you talk about and you confirm that since 2000, we used to have about 55% of doctors who go into private practice. Now we're down to about 36%, about one in three, correct?
That's the Accenture, yeah, that's from Accenture, and that's the statistic that we use. That's correct. It's sad.
It is sad. And as a consumer, I know we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, but I want to start off with consumers don't really know this. It's like they're in a black box where they just keep getting this signal, get covered by insurance, everything will be wonderful. It's like this mantra that puts them absolutely to sleep. In the first few seconds before we take it, I think a couple minutes, why is it a bad thing? 3 minutes.
Oh, my. There are many bad reasons. Maybe we'll continue some after the break.
Oh, we will, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest ones you alluded to straight away in your opening is when a hospital acquires a doctor, that doctor's allegiance naturally shifts from the patient to the hospital. And that is the biggest violation of the Hippocratic Oath, which you mentioned. And doctors didn't go to medical school to do the wrong thing for patients, but ultimately they get tied to a hospital, and they're under contract to admit patients, perform procedures, refer to other employed physicians, refer only to the hospital-owned MRI and mm-hmm. outpatient surgical centers, all of which cost four times more than independent centers. So it's ratcheting up the price, and these doctors, because of their contracts, are based on their quotas and their numbers, are incented to order tests and do more procedures, putting patients in harm's way. So that's just the beginning.
I think you did a masterful job of putting that number one reason, encapsulating it. And I've been on both sides of this. I've done contract work for hospitals all over the country. And I remember sitting in or covering doctors who are away for whatever reason, seeing dozens of patients, 25, 30 patients in an office setting where it was just get them in, get them out, put more on. You can't refuse an appointment that's put into your system, even if you're overwhelmed. I'm a new doctor there, right? So I don't know the patients. Every patient would be new to me. And I hated every moment of it. It was a month of hell, honestly. But it gave me a really good insight on what it was like to be an employed physician, and what yoke you were under to just get it done, get them out, document it, make sure you see the case manager before you discharge a patient, or better yet, have the case manager come to you and say, you need to discharge this patient because of, you know, DRGs, and the hospital's going to start losing money. Of course, they don't put it quite like that, but it's, you know what the bottom line is, and you know exactly what you better do.
It's productivity.
And it's not better. This is what people never really get to see. The infection rate is outrageous in the hospital setting. You have bed sores that people get. You have people not getting better and getting sicker, actually not being given the quality care that they actually deserve because of algorithms, because the hospital has a standard of doing things. You can't go outside the formulary. These are actually things that matter. It's not about efficiency. It's about the individual. It's completely lost in this
type of
system. And it costs more. And we're going to take a break. And I want people to tease down a little bit better why it costs more. There's no reason, in my opinion, why it should cost four or five or sometimes more to do a hospital procedure as it would taking someone to an independent facility. Something's wrong with that system.
Let's talk about that.
Definitely. We'll do that when we come back. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having a very enlightening conversation with Ms. Marnie Jameson, the Executive Director of the Association of Independent Physicians, or Independent Doctors, I'm sorry, I should say. Before the break, we were talking about the disparity in the cost of healthcare given by hospitals versus that given by independent doctors. And I'm not exactly sure how this came to be. Maybe you can help me understand. How do hospitals get away with gouging patients?
Well, you know, and the eye-opening part of all this is it's not even illegal, and it should be, but the hospital industry spends about $130 million a year lobbying on Washington. And you and I both know that's a lot of how the game works. And independent doctors have spent zero. Mm-hmm. So part of it is lobbying, and they've lobbied to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid and explain, say, that, look, we offer all this free care to the community who is underinsured and uninsured, which we know isn't true. Mm-hmm. And we have to keep our lights on 24/7, and we have all this overhead. Therefore, we need to charge a facility fee. We have to charge more than someone who runs an efficient small business like a medical practice that's independent and can actually, you know, see patients for the price that it should be. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we should get this facility fee. Well, that, I'm looking at some statistics just as examples. I didn't cherry pick these because they were the most egregious. They're just common procedures. So a heart catheterization at a freestanding independent center would cost $1,100 under Medicare, and for an independent doctor, and at a hospital-owned facility, the same procedure would cost $4,000, almost four times more. An EKG in an independent center would be $373, and an outpatient hospital setting $1,605. So these are big jumps in the cost, mm-hmm. and the hospitals argue that this is because we provide all this free care, and especially in the nonprofit sector, they're not paying taxes either. So mm-hmm. they're really getting a double bump. They're getting this facility fee plus not paying taxes. And frankly, this is what's driving them. This is why they can afford to pay an independent doctor more than they can make out on their own, because the doctors don't get as much if they're independent for the same procedure as the hospitals get paid. So they can lure the doctor in and say, gee, we can pay you, mm-hmm. we can double your salary if you come to work for us. So it's this mechanism that got started, and it's really what's driving the ability of the hospitals to buy the doctors who are getting squashed because the insurance companies can't pay them. They have to cut their cost payments to them while they raise their payments to the hospital, who keeps lobbying and leveraging for more. So it's a complicated morass, but that's the gist of it and how it goes, and no one's ever really challenged it, but they are now. So the MedPAC, which is the Medicare Policy Advisory Committee, is looking into this, and say it's the Medicare Payment Advisory Committee, I'm mm-hmm. sorry. They are looking at this, and they are telling Congress, we need to have a site-neutral policy. We need to pay hospitals the same as we pay independent physicians. And if we did that, taxpayers would save $3 billion a year just in Medicare alone. So it's a huge amount, and they're getting away with it, and it's not illegal, but patients don't know there's a facility fee. They don't realize they're getting stuck with this, whether they're paying higher taxes, higher premiums with their employer, or higher out-of-pocket costs. It's coming back to everyone.
I think one of the things that maybe we should educate patients about, like you just said, or even doctors, or even an argument that we can use, if they're nonprofit, not-for-profit, what gives them the, you know, do they have an argument to say that they're getting freebies on top of freebies? How can they possibly still be crying poor? That's a really easy argument to make. I don't get that.
Well, this is one of those issues that we are fighting hard on. Mm-hmm. You probably recall that the Association of Independent Doctors is founded by two certified public accountants, so they understand the dynamics of taxation. And one of the reasons they started the association was because they saw how in our community, and we're nationwide, our association, but in the town of Orlando, two major health systems are both nonprofit, Florida Hospital and Orlando Health, and they were buying up physician groups right and left, mm-hmm. and they were seeing how all these taxes, these once tax-paying entities, were now not paying taxes because the hospital was absorbing them. And now, as you probably know, that they don't pay any sales tax, any tangible property tax, any income tax, no real estate tax. I mean, they wow. really do get a hall pass on all of that. And there was a study that came out, in the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post, that even though they say they're going to return for that tax break, which, by the way, is worth $25 billion across America, that tax break that they would pay if they were paying taxes, only 42% of hospitals even tell their patients that they might be eligible for charity care. and only 29% said they would actually charge the uninsured and underinsured the same as an insured patient. Most of the time, they give them these charge master prices, which are huge, mm-hmm. and one in five put liens on their houses and call collections agencies. Now, that isn't how a nonprofit should behave, and they're paying their executives million-dollar salaries, and they have skyboxes, and they have, you know, jet airplanes,
and they sponsor
sports teams. They're not behaving like the nuns did back in the 60s when they were really founded on providing care for the poor.
It's obscene, honestly.
It is. You're really getting me going now. But
well, no, please. I mean, I had no idea that kind of money was floating around because of their workaround. Now, imagine,
right.
It all falls on us as taxpayers even more so. Because
absolutely.
When they have these huge systems and they start Pac-Manning community hospitals and buying up doctor practices and everybody starts paying no taxes, guess who's paying it? It's you. It's me. It's every other small business. And it's a joke. And my gosh, that's terrible.
Well, and I think that the part that is, it's all under the radar, except that you and I are trying to make sure that it gets out from mm-hmm. under the radar, that patients don't know. Patients can have a doctor relationship, say it's with a gynecologist or a cardiologist, that they've been seeing this doctor over the years, and they don't realize from one day to the next when that doctor gets acquired. And suddenly something changes, and mm-hmm. mostly it's their bill. Their bill goes up four times, and they don't realize they not only get impacted that way, but this medical group that was once a small business and employed maybe an office manager or some front office staff, those people now don't have jobs. The hospital's not taking care of their overhead, so we've gone, you know, some people have lost jobs, but the taxes that this little practice was paying into the community is now comes off the tax rolls. So I'd rather see two officers in every police car and more teachers and fewer students in a classroom than I would like to see hospitals not paying their taxes and picking up these practices. We mm-hmm. all pick up the tab one way or the other, and it decimates our community. In Orlando, again, we're in Orange County, last year property taxes went up 17.7%. That was a huge jump, mm-hmm. and people didn't know why. Well, we know for a fact that just two practices alone, because the CPAs were managing these practices, the two practices alone when they were purchased by the hospital took $350,000 off of our tax rolls.
Wow.
That's a lot. The community picks up the tab, and they don't even know it.
That's amazing. I mean, it's a domino effect that has...
Yes.
I mean, I was just thinking about the medical side of it, but the economic side through the entire ripples through the entire community. And
yes,
it's really unconscionable, honestly, when you really think about this. The fact that these hospitals have so much power, and yet they don't even do what they say they do. They don't even offer quality care. And I've been on the other side again, where I'm getting consults from corporate hospitals when I used to contract with them. Crazy consults from people who never saw the patient, and I was convinced it's just because they wanted to make another bill so they could charge the patient or the insurance company for a consult that was unnecessary. Earwax, where they never even looked in the patient's ear. You know, things like that. I'm serious.
Wow.
On
wow.
weekends, you know, at 5 p.m, just to do it. And
wow.
you never spoke to the doctor. It was always an electronic consult or from a nurse who didn't know anything about why the consult was given. There's stories about the ERs ordering all sorts of cardiac workups, you know, that didn't need to get done because it's all about billing. Nobody's following this. Nobody is on it. They seem like it's like a black hole and they all get a pass. But if it's an independent doctor, my gosh, you're just billing people. You're taking feet off, cutting tonsils out just because you want to make a buck. And we need to talk now about our side. How it really affects an independent doctor. You did a great job of speaking to, it's not us that's costing the healthcare system. It is not the doctor. How much do you think an average doctor, independent, really costs the healthcare system?
Well, I know that the every healthcare dollar, only 8 cents goes to the provider, the physician, practitioner. 8 cents of the dollar. So, and yet, the physicians in a hospital setting drive 80% of the revenue-producing decisions. So, of course, hospitals like to buy doctors. They're cheap, and they make them tons of money. It's awful.
Wow. Oh, you just said it. Just what I was thinking, what I've been saying for like 4 years. Talk to me now. I know we're going to take another break in a few minutes, but you just described something that you just said a mouthful. We are the cost drivers of the healthcare system. We're the face of the healthcare system, but we're technically not, especially independent doctors. I can't speak for those that are under contract or those that are employees because they don't have power. They do what they're told. They jump as high as they tell them to jump. Or you've got, you know, sham peer review. You've got patient satisfaction surveys. Now you have, what is it, quality payments on based on quality, whatever that means, under the Affordable Care Act. And now there's something called a clinically integrated network. Do you know what that is? And can you, if you do, can you describe that to our listeners?
Well, it is a hybrid, and we counsel our physicians not to sign up. But these are when a hospital can't own every doctor in town, not only because some doctors just say no, which we like, but they also can't create the monopoly. There's some stopgap. Mm-hmm. Then they create these clinically integrated networks, which are still very bad news. These are other ways hospitals have of controlling doctors and getting the doctors to refer to their groups and or their hospital facilities. But the real frightening part is that the first thing they do is they make sure they attach software to the doctor's database and get all the data on the patients. And they want to create this electronic medical record, which everyone thinks is such a great idea, because they're going to share all this data. Well, as soon as the hospital gets that data, they're mining patients for every single thing that shows up. And that's what all this electronic medical records is about. It's about if some patient goes to the doctor and says, gee, I'm a little concerned about my blood sugar, mm-hmm. and the doctor says, well, gee, let's try this pre-diabetes medication to help get your weight under control. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, this patient's flagged as a diabetic and is going to get all this information from the doctor. They're going to get courted into metabolic programs, and, you know, it's just awful. So what they really are after in these clinically integrated networks is, don't be fooled, they're after your patients.
On that note, let's take a break so we can think about that. You're mm-hmm. listening to Medicine on Call.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Good morning. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking with the executive director of the Association of Independent Doctors, Ms. Marnie Jamison. And, you know, we talked about how the hospitals are gouging us and have inserted themselves in between the doctor and the patient. And now we just it's like a vampire sucking, leeching on the blood of patients and physicians. And unfortunately, a lot of our colleagues have fallen under the spell. And you know, I just this show does not subscribe to fear. I don't work in that mindset, because as soon as you start thinking what if and I can't, then you're at the you're going to be victimized by something that looks good on the other side. I have yet to meet a doctor who's joined one of these practices, one of these hospital-based systems, that's happy. They've sold their practice. They're like, why did I do it? It looked good at first. But when they start telling you how high to jump and how many patients to see, and you lose your autonomy. You know, I didn't go into medical school to be somebody's girl, honestly. I want to run my own ship. I want to take care of my patients the way I train to do it. And I want to use every skill that I have to get the job done. I'm offended by something or somebody telling me what to do. If that means a patient coming in and telling me they want a particular medication, it's not going to go down in my office, let alone some insurance company telling me what to do. So I know there's a pressure now that doctors are, it's so dissonant that we're losing doctors for many reasons, and one is to suicide. And I'm convinced it's because the autonomy, the ability to be an advocate for your patient, the ability to do what you love to do is being stripped away, being legislated away, frankly. And we partially let it happen. I really regret when I first opened my practice, I was told, you have to take every insurance, patients won't come to see you, you won't stay open. That was the first wives' tale that we believe. We should stop believing that. Independent doctors, I've said this, I think when I met you at in D.C., I did a talk for another organization, and the first thing I said was, Obamacare is the best thing that has ever happened to us. It is, because now we have to make a choice. We have to decide whether we love what we do, we love ourselves, and we love our practices, or we want to be victims. There's more of us growing day in, day out. I know that your organization is growing. You've only been around, what, is it 2 years or 3 years now?
Two and a half years. April of 2013 it started.
And how many doctors do you have now in your association?
Now we have, you'll see online, we show close to 600, but we actually have 850-some members right now, because some of them opt not to be online because they don't want the hospitals knowing their members.
Oh, that is so sad.
So we have an option for them to check a confidentiality box. But we, when I took over 13 months ago, September of 2014, the association had under 300, about 280 members, and now, you know, we've obviously tripled that, and we're now in 14 states, and in four states I have chapters, which are at least, you know, 30 doctors or more. In Maine, we have 260 doctors. Up in Maine, we have 60 doctors in California in our LA chapter. 35 doctors in South Carolina have just come on board. So we're getting great, great pockets and communities of doctors, and we're making a difference in communities all over the place, and it's exciting.
Well, it's exciting because now, you told me when you had our conversation about a partnership, or I should say an acknowledgement from corporate interests, like Delta, I think you gave me an example. Mm-hmm. They understand. It's now about education. This is the perfect time to be a doctor if you take your blinders off and you start taking your power back. The hospitals have just ridden the wave to such a degree, and they've gouged the system and just abused everything so badly. If you let patients know, you let businesses know, there's a cheaper way to do this. It's a fraction of the cost to see an independent doctor. Your patients can see a doctor, not an MA or PA. You know, they have access. There's an individual practice of medicine that's based on choice, not on algorithms. And if you let employers know that, I think they start sending, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, we've talked a lot about the problem, and there is a solution, and it's a multi-part solution, but I'd like to start with consumers. Mm-hmm. Consumers need to ask their providers, their doctors, before they get into that doctor's office, if they're independent or if they work for the hospital. Step one. And they need to ask, and then only support an independent physician. And then they need to find out if that, ask that independent physician to only refer them to freestanding independent facilities. They will cut their medical bills a lot, and they will vote with their feet and their dollars and not give the business to the hospital, which has a huge marketing voice and seems to sweep people up in their tide. So that's one. Two, businesses have a huge role. Delta took a wonderful step forward, and I spoke with their health strategist about this program, and she said what she said was very interesting. But Delta requires their employees, and they sent a mailer out to their employees nationwide. They require them to go to independent doctors and get their ancillary services at independent facilities. So if they need a mammogram or any sort of a CAT scan or MRI, they need to go to a freestanding facility. And they work with United Healthcare, which provides a website where the employee can go on and find the independent facilities and providers, which is terrific, a terrific mm-hmm. tool. And moreover, if these employees go to a hospital-employed doctor or a hospital-employed facility, they will get a surcharge of $250. They'll be penalized. So this is, they're saying, look, you need to work with us to keep your premiums down and to support independent doctors and to make a huge difference in your health and our bottom line and yours too, less out of pocket for you. So when I spoke to the health strategist and I applauded her for this move that they took, she said, you know, it wasn't very popular among employees. And I had to smack my forehead. The employees think they're getting ripped off. They somehow think they're getting, instead of Delta looking out for them and saying, let us help you get the best medical care and keep your costs down, they think somehow they're getting rooked. So they're coming around to get it, but it's an uphill battle. But hospitals or patients need to ask their providers, and employers need to educate their patients about the savings they're going to get and maybe require them to move. This is going to help. This is going to start turning this ship around mm-hmm. when the hospitals stop losing the business, because businesses and consumers are driving the trend toward independence. And a third big piece of this, Elena, and you wouldn't believe how few doctors do this. If they're independent, they need to educate their patients. They need to tell their patients. I created a letter that I sent to all my members to put in their new patient package. It starts off with, congratulations. You have made an important decision in your health care by choosing an independent provider, and here's why. Just let them know mm-hmm. what's going on. So, I mean, everyone's just passing the buck and not doing anything, but there are really concrete steps that consumers and businesses and doctors can take to start turning this around.
The most important thing that you're saying, and I think the underpinning, is you don't have to wait. You don't have to wait for Congress to come and help you. You don't have to wait for the insurance companies to drive you so insane that you make a difference. You can do this now yourself. If you are a practicing physician and you're not in bed with a hospital at this point, you don't have to be. You don't. And if, God forbid, or hopefully you can extract yourself from a contract, there's life on the other side. It's a joy now to go to work. You know, I'm a little bit more out there. I don't want to take any insurance at some point, because I believe that their policies are counter to help to me providing quality care to my patients. There's a few insurance companies left in my practice, but Medicaid's gone, Medicare's gone, Obamacare never got in, and Humana, you name it, the list is getting longer because they are so anti-physician, so algorithm-driven. And they're not, you know, I'm worthy. I spend 35, 40 minutes, sometimes an hour with my patients. I'm not going to take $60 for an initial office visit. I'm worth more than that. And mm-hmm. once we decide to stop doing that, if they don't have a doctor panel, then they can't do that to us. Right. You know, I'm not interested in seeing 100 patients a day. That's not healthcare. And I think more independent doctors are figuring that out. That's why we're seeing direct primary care. We're seeing concierge-based medicine, subscription-based medicine, bartering. There's all sorts of great things happening on the independent side. And you're right. If patients understood, I interview a lot on radio shows. The first thing I say is that you won't believe this, but it's cheaper to access healthcare without insurance than it is to pay out of pocket. Mm-hmm. That's and people just like, what? And you start giving the examples that you gave where it's a few hundred dollars for a CT as opposed to a couple of thousand. It's the same thing. You know, if we can just get people to understand that it's not, there's a parallel system. It's the hospital-based, corporate-driven, and us, the independent doctors. They are not equal. We're better.
That's true.
We're cheaper. We're patient-centered. We're Hippocratic oath-driven. We're not agents of the government. We're advocates for our patient. That's the marketing. If we can get that out there, I think people in the know, patients in the know, will flood our offices.
I couldn't agree with you more. We have a great example right nearby. One of our members, she went to work for a hospital right out of college. She was a typical med student and, you know, didn't have a great business mind. She didn't think she did. She actually did. But she, you know, had a lot of debt and just she wanted to get married and have a family and practice medicine. And she thought being an employed physician was the way to go. And she's an internist and she was doing a really nice job seeing her patients. And then the hospital came to her with her contract and said, well, you know, you're only seeing 17 patients a day. We really need you to see 30. And she's like, I'm doing a really good job, and my outcomes are really good, and my patients are really happy, and I'm really satisfied. So she said, I tried for a couple days to see maybe 25 patients. She said, I couldn't do a good job. I was feeling miserable. So I went back to doing my things my way and seeing 17 or 18 patients a day, and I figured the hospital would say, oh, well, she's doing such a nice job, and her outcomes are so good, and her patients are so happy. We'll just let her go. She said they didn't. They walked in my office after the end of the contract and said, you're fired. And she couldn't believe it because she'd been doing such a wonderful job. Mm-hmm. So she said, huh. And she went out on her own. She left the hospital and started a concierge practice. And she's thrilled. She's making a lot more money. Her patients are happier. She's doing it her way. She's thumbing her nose at the hospital. And, you know, we're all the big winner for that one.
Absolutely. So is the profession. And we mm-hmm. need more of doctors like that. I'm sure mm-hmm. that the mm-hmm. independent doctors, the part of your association, I bet if you polled every single one of them, they would have the same mindset, and they do the same thing in their practice. And, you know, they're fed up with someone telling them what to do. It's an empowering position to be in, to be able to control your own destiny, to run your office the way you see fit. I mean, you mentioned, I'm reading your website, you talk a lot about efficiency. And let's take a break. Last one. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having, a really important conversation with the Executive Director of the Association of Independent Doctors. And if you want to reach her, you should go to AID-US.org. That's a wealth of information on that website. I spent a lot of time last night reading the articles that you've written, and I learned a lot, and I was really pleased that there's somebody who gets it, somebody who can speak eloquently, and somebody who's really working on an independent doctor's behalf. And I want to thank you for everything that you do, by the way.
Thank you.
My pleasure. So we were talking about efficiencies and how independent doctors actually cost the system less. You know, we're all small business owners, so we actually have to navigate so many hurdles in order to stay open, make payroll, be able to see patients, find new innovations to make it more affordable, so you actually take home more money and make it a better patient experience. On your side of it, you know, I think I know the answer, but do you find that the independent doctor, the experience of the patient as the consumer, and that's one of the things that patients really, I think they're so used to being abused that they don't even know what good is anymore, you know?
I want to share a story that really speaks to this. I got a call a couple weeks ago from a fellow in Kentucky, a plumber. He was a 60-year-old fellow named Norm. He wanted to tell me his story. He had wanted an independent doctor. He had enough awareness to realize there was a difference. Mm-hmm. And so he looked around for an independent primary care physician, and he found someone he thought would do the job, and he went and he met with her, and she got to know him and made a record, and she became his doctor. They established care. And a few months later, he was having some belly pain, and he called her up and said, gee, I know I'm not on your list today, and you've got a full schedule, but can you squeeze me in even at the end of the day to come in and help me out with what's going on? And she said the directive was go to the emergency room, get a CAT scan, and I'll read the results and get back to you. And he said, huh, this isn't what I had in mind. He scratched his head and said, you know, I really wanted someone to look me in the eye, put her finger on her chin, consider my situation, and then make a call. I didn't really want to go to the emergency room. So unbeknownst to him until later, between his establishing care with her and that phone call, she'd been acquired by a hospital. ta-da, wow. This is how care changes. He wanted to go in, if she were independent and weren't beholden to the hospital and weren't judged on how many admissions she makes and people she drives into the emergency room and CAT scans she orders, maybe she would have taken him in at the end of the day, put her finger on her chin and looked in his eyes and asked a few questions. So here's the best part of the story. He calls his urologist, somebody he'd known for years, and said, you know, I kind of just got a bad feeling about the recommendation of my new primary care doctor. What do you think? And this urologist friend of his said, Norm, it sounds like your diverticulitis is acting up again. Here's a script for a $7 antibiotic. Go see if this helps. It was cleared up in 24 hours.
And free, as opposed to thousands of dollars for the CT scan. $15,000
easily to be an ER patient, and he probably would have been admitted. And instead it was $7.
Think about that, listeners, because that's the future of medicine.
Exactly.
And if you take your power back and make proper choices, in choices with intention about, I'm worthy, you know, I don't want someone to treat me like a number, I want someone to look me in the eye and put hands on me. I've had patients come in and tell me they'd never been touched, and they're set up for the OR. But they had a feeling that I didn't really like it. I didn't feel good. So they're in my office now. Thank goodness they had that sixth sense. But you
everyone
can imagine.
Everyone needs to have instincts like Norm's and like that patient who says something's just not right.
And it's okay to have that.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like you feel like maybe I'm going to hurt someone's feelings if I want to protect myself. You won't. But you'll make it better for everybody else if you do something like that. My God, that's amazing.
Right.
That's a great story.
And I thought so. I mean, it really does. And I plan to do something, pitch that to the media and get him on board. And, you know, I have to make sure the physician, well, she'll get called, you know, and it'll create some waves. And, which brings me to a point that I would like to make that you haven't asked. I'm not sure people are aware of this, but I've worked in the media my whole life, and it's very sad what's happening to journalism, but what I have found working in a newspaper setting is that now, because of the economics of the newspapers, good stories that take on the hospitals get canned because of the advertising power the hospitals have. You cannot get a negative story about a hospital in a paper anymore. And it's one of the reasons I left. It's very sad. I understand journalism and the decisions they have to make, because the advertising is what's keeping them alive and they're drowning. But it's very, very difficult to have an honest story that's critical of a health center in your community. And that's another way that patients are being kept in the dark.
That's an excellent point. I've spoken about it before. You know, if you watch the news at night, most of the commercials are some sort of pharmaceutical. And, you know, follow the money. Whoever controls the purse strings has the power. Why shouldn't it be the doctor and the patient again? Just ask yourself that question. Do you want the insurance companies to have the final word, or do you want to have the final word? That's, I think, one of the things that'll drive people to make conscious choices. The insurance company doesn't love you. The government doesn't love you. They want to control you. And they control you by, if you're sick, they definitely control you. My mantra to my patients is, don't get sick. Really. I want you healthy. I want prevention. I want to make sure that you have all the tools to take care of yourself. I'm here if you don't, if you get sick. I don't want to see you for silly things that, you know, if you walk into an ER, they're going to gouge you for. Then they don't even make a diagnosis anymore. I'm not sure if you noticed this, but if you go into the emergency room, you rarely get treatment. You get a referral note to a specialist, and you get billed for the visit. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
That's a whole new ballgame. So
yes.
Again, we talk about independent doctors. People need to understand it's not just primary care. It's independent ear, nose, and throat, independent urgent cares, independent labs and pathology centers. The whole system is recreated outside of the hospital setting. So you don't have to be in there at all. You have independent surgery centers as well. So if you stay in the independent side, you never, hopefully, have to go to the hospital at all unless you have something really extreme. But that's what they're supposed to be for in the first place, aren't they? It's not to take care of every little bump and bruise and rob you. It's to take care of you when you're really sick.
Right. And we have a new group that joined in South Carolina, a group of 10 or so orthopedists, and they do have an ambulatory care center, a surgical center, and they're actually doing joint replacements, which is radical to think about. But their infection rate is zero compared to what it used to be in the hospital, which was, you know, few out of 1,000, which isn't good. You don't want to get an infection when you have a joint replaced. And it's cleaner, it's more efficient, it's less expensive, it's better for the patient. So whenever you as a consumer can scout out a provider that's keeping you out of the hospital and you're going into a center that's independently owned, you're going to be in much better shape.
I think you hit the nail on the head, and it goes down to quality and customer service. I, as an independent doctor, have to be better than my counterpart if I want business. I have to be more user-friendly, be more accountable, which not a problem, but accessible, same-day appointments. Sometimes you have to wait for weeks to get into a hospital-owned physician group. What do they care whether or not you wait 5 or 6 weeks? They're getting a paycheck. I want to make sure that I keep your business, get your mom and dad's business, get your office co-workers' business, because I'm the best doctor in Atlanta. That's my goal. I get rewarded for it on multiple levels. Think about it. You want a doctor who thinks that way, as opposed to next, it's 5:01, I'm out the door. You've got to call, go to the ER. Because they're so overworked. I mean, you're seeing 50, 60 patients a day. How much of yourself can you actually give to individual patients when you're just trying to get through it? You know, it's just a different mindset altogether. And it's about education. And what's the best way for doctors to learn more about your organization?
Well, they certainly can get on our website. They can send me an email, and I will send them our press kit. In order to fight this fight, Elena, you've heard me say this in D.C., we need numbers and resources. It's a David and Goliath situation right now, and we're growing here, and we're working hard to get the message out and give a voice to independent doctors and inform communities, patients, consumers, businesses about the alternative and why they need to care and be aware and vote with their dollars and their feet and their good choices. And so joining is a great thing to do for us. We make good use of your $500 annual dues, mm-hmm. keep you informed of what we are doing, give you tools to stay more competitive. We offer physician members a very significant group purchasing association membership, where they're saving on average between 17% and 35% on their medical and office supplies. Mm-hmm. So if we can't get doctors more money, we can help them reduce their costs. There's some, you know, real tangible reasons to join, but growth is important to us, and I'd like to go to Washington next year saying we have 10,000 members, not almost 1,000, and that growth will really help us turn the tide. I think we are going to make a difference. We already are, and just in the year I've been here, I've seen, you know, just more and more awareness. I do have a few things I'd love to tell consumers if you have a minute, but I want to make sure I've answered your questions.
Oh, you have, and we have about 30 seconds, so please shoot.
Okay. One, consumers need to get, this isn't like any other purchase you make. If something costs more in healthcare, it doesn't mean it's better. Some people think they're getting ripped off. If the doctor's cheaper, they're not getting better care. That is so far from the truth. Another piece is that people don't tend to feel sorry for doctors. Consumers tend to think, oh, doctors have it made, and there's not a soft spot for them necessarily, and I'm trying to change that. I am not a physician, but I love physicians, and I want them to do very well, and they are being very, very hurt by this system, and they went to a lot of medical school. They have a lot of medical training, and they are tremendous resources that we need to support. So I really want to make sure that we don't lose sight of the fact that doctors aren't the problem. They're the ones we need to help. And third point, which is a little bit unrelated, is I really get upset when I see a nonprofit hospital gouging patients, not paying taxes, buying up doctors for their referrals, and hiding under a faith-based mission. Do not be deceived by a faith-based mission. It's not what it appears to be.
I want to thank you so much for being a guest on my show. I hope you come back in the future, and I'm looking forward to becoming a member of the Association of Independent Doctors. Thank you again, and thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.